listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. These were tough holidays in the area of the Camp Fire in Butte County, California. The heavy rains have since come, and that's adding to the struggle in what is a devastated area around the town of Paradise. CAP Radio reporter Pauline Bartoloni has spent time there over the holidays. She's working on a long-term project following families who have been displaced by the fire, and she's here to share some of her reporting. Hi, Pauline.
Hi, Beth. Good to be here,
as always. It's great to have you back in the studio. I'm so happy to hear your voice back on our air.
Yeah, it's like coming home.
So give me a description of what the area looks like now.
Well, there are some signs of life. Businesses are opening back up. There's some car repair shops. There's convenience stores. There's a supermarket. Over the holidays, they had ice skating and a tree lighting ceremony. And, you know, there's this idea that Paradise was completely leveled, that Paradise is gone. And actually, I've been up there a few times, and that's not really true. There are still homes standing. CAL FIRE estimated that maybe about 90% of the homes had burned down. So there's still, you know, 1 in 10 still standing. And it's completely random, it seems to me, just with an amateur eye, which ones are still standing. You know, you're driving along a main highway and there's a Big O tire on one side of the street. And then the opposite side of the street, there's a completely leveled property. So it's kind of the way the wind blew and where they carried the burning embers and which structures they hit.
What's happening with residents being able to go back to their property? Some of them even, I think, living on their property. How's that possible?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I have heard of families going back to their homes that are still standing. There's one neighborhood in Megalia, just north of Paradise, where everybody has Comcast, power, water. It's like nothing happened there. But I interviewed this one woman who bought a trailer for $600, janky-looking thing, no heat. And she parked it up in her land in Concow, which is to the east of Paradise, and is living up there by herself. And, you know, it's just a stone's throw away from her devastated property. And I asked her if it was depressing, you know, how what carried her through it, how she was able to live up there. And this is what she told me.
I don't know. I grew up here, too. You know, I raised my family here, but it made me self-reliant. And I did a lot of art up here, my art projects, drawings and glasswork and stuff. And just roots, you know, I made roots here. Love it. Love. I'm married to this land like a husband. I am loyal to it. I am, you know, fiercely determined to be here.
So as you can hear, there's this kind of pioneer spirit, frontiersman or frontierswoman mentality, bootstrap mentality that, you know, don't need much to survive. But also there is a tight-knit community there in some of these rural forested areas. She has a neighbor who helps her get water, her food, her family's bringing boxes of food up to her. And her neighbor, Clarence Trustley, just said, you know, we all root for each other here. I'm going to get a mill with whatever money I can find, and we're going to mill her home, And so I asked Clarence if he thought that Barbara Beers could survive the winter, and this is what he told me.
She's not by herself. She's got a whole community of people. Like, you've seen that she gave us a phone call this morning to level out her trailer, and her trailer was level. She didn't level her trailer. Me, another buddy, you know, we take our community and pride of especially take care of the olders. Like when we get our mail, Barb's the first one to get a house. She is one of the oldest people up here that's been up here for a long time, and she has nothing. She doesn't have the money to buy anything. She gets a free house.
What he's describing and what you're talking about is remarkable. But they do need some resources or services. What's available and how are they surviving in some of those bigger needs?
Well, there are some businesses in the town of Paradise that are reopening, but they're really relying on, you know, FEMA assistance or just giveaways, food giveaways, friends and families. visiting them and dropping off food and supplies.
What's the official line about what people are and aren't supposed to do?
Yeah, I mean, excuse me, public officials are kind of in a tight spot with this, a tough spot, because on one hand, they're saying these are hazardous materials. I mean, Barbara Beers is living amongst incinerated appliances, propane tanks, ash, and some of that is, you know, they're compounds that are heavy metals, cancerous materials. They can cause a minimum respiratory illness or, you know, they're linked to cancer. And so they don't want people to go back and live on their properties until the hazardous waste is removed. But at the same time, they know some people don't have anywhere to go. We're in an affordable housing crisis here in California. And so they passed a couple of ordinances kind of setting the parameters under which people can return. So they don't want people to go back to their homes if they have less than 2/3 of an acre in Paradise. And if they live in the outskirts in the Butte County, they can go back if they have an acre or more.
How about people who still have their homes? What's it like for them to be there in the midst of so many who lost so much?
Yeah, I've been talking to one family in Magalia. There's just not a lot of life. They're kind of confined to their home. They can leave their home, but there's not much there. So it's kind of depressing for them to see the loss of their community and their surroundings.
They also have to deal with the ripple effect. For example, what happens now to their homeowners policy? Because they have an existing home, their life is going on, but so much has been affected by the loss around them.
That's right. I mean, some of the people who still have their homes standing, some people would say they're the lucky ones. But what I'm learning in this reporting process is that nobody was left unscathed and by this disaster. There's one family I'm following, the wife's name, Tamara Camry. They actually have two properties still standing up in Butte County. And I visited the property, barely even smoke damage inside their home. I mean, everything was intact except their deck was burned down in their primary residence. And just last month, they got a letter from their homeowner's insurer that the company was not renewing their policy after this month. So they're kind of kicked to the curb to find a new homeowner's insurer in a really high-risk area for fires. They're probably going to have a lot higher homeowner's insurance rate.
Hmm. We've just talked about two examples, but you're following families over a long period of time. What's your goal with this project?
Well, we want to do a series of stories, long-form, in-depth storytelling. It's part of our coverage of people and place and how they recover from disasters, you know, whether that be wildfires, you know, could be a flood or earthquakes. But we are really excited about it because I think you see a lot of headlines, you see a lot of people caught in a moment in time in the recovery process, but we're going to be following the story as they unfold for the next 9 months at least. And that series will air in the fall, but you'll hear their voices beforehand.
Every time we air a conversation like this or related to the school, I hear thank yous from people who say, we're so glad this is still being talked about, that the struggle and the aftermath isn't being left behind in thought as we move on to other topics. Were you met with some gratitude by people that you're there and that you are connecting the outer world with this world?
Yeah, I think it's been mixed. I've been hearing a whole range of emotions. Some people thankful that I'm covering them and some people who kind of don't want to be bothered because honestly, they have a lot going on in their lives. Their lives are really chaotic. I'm hearing a lot of just anger about feeling out of control in the situation, not having a lot of choices, sadness, confusion. And so sometimes a reporter coming in is a priority. But I think people really want to convey that there's just an outpouring of support that they're hearing from around the nation and getting gifts and generous donations.
Let me try to squeeze in one last soundbite here. This is from Chris Kirsten, and he's talking about what happens next.
I'm trying to find a place as close to this as possible. We loved it up here, and I've gotten involved with the long-term recovery group to try to think about what can this place be 10 years from now? You know, what is the vision that we can hold collectively and inspire people to bring back a community and an economy in a way that hasn't been seen before? So what's the upside? What's the hope? How do we do something really different with this place and make it something more special than it was before? The town is never going to come back. I mean, look at the devastation around us. I mean, all these people are displaced. Many of them are not going to come back. And so it begs the question, what do we want to create here that invites people to come back?
Inviting people to come back. So he is looking to the future. All right. This is a to be continued, Pauline. And again, so glad to have you back here at Cap Radio.
Thanks, Beth.
And that's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. Thanks for joining us.